Good morning, and welcome to Just One Thing, Simple Practices for Resilient Happiness by Dr. Rick Hansen. This is your volunteer programmer, Babs Felix, in Green Valley. Rick Hansen, PhD, is a psychologist and New York Times best-selling author. He's been invited to speak at NASA, Oxford, Stanford, Harvard, and meditation centers worldwide. His books are available in 28 languages and include Making Great Relationships, Hardwiring Happiness, Just One Thing, and Mother Nurture. His works have been featured on the BBC, CBS, NPR, and other major media. And now, Just One Thing. What difference do we make? The practice? Vote. Why? For complicated reasons, some of my own doing, I was pretty unhappy growing up. So I've explored how to heal my anxieties and sorrows and grow in resilience, happiness, and inner peace. My work as a therapist and writer, such as in almost all of these Just One Things, has also been focused on that individual level. That focus is certainly useful and legitimate. Still, it is also true that large-scale economic, cultural, and political forces impact individual health and well-being. For example, poverty is a major source of mental health issues, including for nearly 1 in 5 American children. So, it's appropriate to consider how these large-scale forces affect you personally, and what you can do about it, and what you can do to help others who are also affected. You could be worried about the economy, the storms and droughts of climate change, brutal wars, or the rise of authoritarianism. You could be deeply concerned about the world that our children and theirs will inherit. Depending on the latest news, it's natural to feel stunned and powerless, and to be flooded with outrage or an overwhelming sorrow. Still, even in the midst of all this, you can be mindful, aware and present, and not entirely swept away. Then, at some point, you take a breath and you look around and try to figure out what to do. One thing to do is to vote. We vote in lots of ways. Besides what we do at a ballot box, we offer a kind of vote, a choice with consequences, when we sign a petition or send money to a cause or candidate. In a broad sense, we vote when we speak up for anyone who is being mistreated. Inside your mind, you cast a kind of vote when you take a moral stand. The root of the word vote is vow, to make a commitment, to claim whatever power you do have and use it. Someone might say, it doesn't matter. Any single vow, any single vote, any thought or word or deed is a drop in the ocean. But every choice matters to the person who makes it. Knowing that you are committed to something and have kept your word to yourself, that you've walked your talk, feels good in its own right. Plus, it's a powerful antidote to helplessness and despair. Further, When others see you taking action, that can inspire them to do the same. And the gradual accumulation of many little efforts, drop by drop, can become a mighty stream. I came of age in the late 1960s, and in my lifetime, there have been major improvements in civil rights, environmentalism, gay marriage, and women's rights. These changes have been the results of countless votes that have added up over time. Of course, there is still a long way to go. The votes we cast with our ballots and words and deeds are no guarantee of success. But if we don't vote again and again, what is guaranteed is failure. How? Vote for the facts. Being foggy about facts is like driving a car with your eyes closed. Some say that we can't really know the truth about big things like national governments or climate change. I think that's lazy at best. The basics are usually pretty easy to see. Who is getting richer and who is getting poorer? Are glaciers melting? Who is strengthening democracy and who is weakening it? 10 or 20 minutes online with some credible sources will tell you a lot, particularly when they are consistent with each other. Depending on the issue, you can find good summaries for the general public from university institutes, scientific and professional organizations, nonpartisan nonprofits, and Wikipedia. Major news organizations such as Reuters and the Los Angeles Times are not perfect, but they do compete with each other for accuracy, and when they fall short, they usually make corrections. Reading their critics is also helpful. The facts matter. We are intimately affected by real events, both in the hallways of our homes and in the halls of power. In a family, company, community, or country, people who lie in order to hold on to their power delegitimize it. At any level, any person or group that punishes truth tellers or uses disinformation to crowd out the truth is attacking the foundation of any healthy relationship. Turn in your ballot. Voting is about participation, and participation itself is not partisan. I have my preferences, but fundamentally, I don't care how people vote. I just hope that they'll vote at all. Yet, in U.S. presidential elections, about 2 in 5 people did not bother to vote. And young people, 18 to 25-year-olds, are even less engaged, although they will most inherit the effects of global warming, wealth inequity, and other serious problems. Turnout in American congressional and local elections is even lower. Voting is sacred. As Representative John Lewis wrote a few days before he died, democracy is not a state, it is an act. Our votes matter. In 2016, for example, Donald Trump lost the popular vote by nearly 2.9 million people, but just 78,000 votes in 3 states, Wisconsin, Michigan, and Pennsylvania, put him in the White House. You can be glad about this if you supported him, or dismayed if you didn't. But either way, it's a fact showing how much individual votes add up and matter. So, make sure you are registered to vote and informed about your choices, and going to the nonpartisan Heal Democracy website is an easy way to do this. Mail-in balloting is highly secure because there is a paper trail. It is actually more secure than electronic voting machines and less vulnerable to foreign interference. Whether in person or by mail, many studies have shown that actual cases of voter fraud are extremely rare and never enough to sway an election. What does sway elections is voter suppression, when one political party makes voting as difficult as possible for its opponents. The only way to defeat those tricks is through high levels of voter turnout. Confront bad faith. It's one thing to argue about politics in good faith. Then there is a shared interest in the actual facts and a commitment to basic fairness. If you shouldn't do something, well, I shouldn't do it either. Telling the truth and playing fair are the foundation of all relationships, from two people in a couple to millions of people in a country. Lying and cheating are not tolerated in sports or business. So why do we put up with them in our politics? What you do will depend on the situation. You might ignore some troll on Facebook or gently ask a friend with different views if you could talk about politics in another kind of way. Or, as soon as it's clear that the other person has zero interest in good faith dialogue, you might say something like, "What's your real purpose here? You keep saying things that are untrue or unrelated to what I'm talking about. You're just trying to change the subject instead of dealing with what I'm saying." Even if you don't get anywhere with that person, you've stopped wasting your time. Plus, you might have a good effect on others who are watching. Stand up for others. I remember being 11 years old and the visceral shock of going to a gas station's bathroom in North Carolina in 1963 and seeing three doors labeled men, women, and colored. My life has had its difficulties, but as a white man, I've been advantaged in many ways. I look at my home and my savings. I know that they are the result of three kinds of things: personal efforts, luck, good and bad, including the genetic lottery, and advantages that operate by disadvantaging others. Some fraction of what I own comes from current and historical discrimination against women, people of color, and other marginalized groups. That fraction is not 100%, but it's sure not 0%. Whatever it is, it's ill-gotten gains. Most people don't walk out of the front door planning to disadvantage others. This is about sorrow, not shame, and compassion and a commitment to justice. For those of us who have benefited, as I have, from systemic advantages, I think there is a particular responsibility to do what we can. As we vote with our thoughts and words, we can listen and feel the weight of what's being said by people who have been disadvantaged, and try to learn and not assume and recognize impacts on others, whatever our intent may have been, and find the sincere desire to be an ally and keep trying to be a better one. Vote for yourself. Deep down, we each have the power to see what we see, value what we value, and make our own plans. It may not be safe or useful to say this out loud, but we can always say it to ourselves. That's a kind of vote. No matter what happens out there in the world, we can always vote within our own minds. It's like we each have an inner voting booth. We can take refuge in the sure knowing of what we do there. I draw guidance and strength from people who have faced vastly greater hardships than I have, and who speak of what we can do inside ourselves with the authority of their own suffering and pain. Most of these people are not famous, and still, their words have tremendous weight. Some are well known, such as the Dalai Lama. I remember watching an interview with him in which he spoke of the terrible mistreatment that Tibetans face in their own country. In his face and tone and words, he expressed that irreducible human freedom to make our own choices, to claim the power that we do have, and to use it, and use it well, with compassion for all beings. You are listening to Just One Thing, Simple Practices for Resilient Happiness by Dr. Rick Hansen, brought to you by Sun Sounds of Arizona in Flagstaff. And here's another Just One Thing. What's nearby? The practice? Love your neighbor. Why? This practice might sound extreme or pushy, and I want to tell you what I mean by it. Everyone has lots of neighbors, and they come in many shapes and sizes. Obviously, the people living across the street are neighbors, but in some sense, so are the people you live with. Friends, relatives, coworkers, all the people you know are neighbors. So are the people at the market or walking past on the street. Other living things are neighbors as well, such as cats and dogs, birds and bees, ants on the kitchen counter, and plants and trees. There's also a neighborhood inside each of us. The human body contains about 100 trillion cells, and at least as many microorganisms that are neighbors too. Plus, consider your mind. My own mind is like a village with many characters at different stages of biological and psychological evolution, chatting or arguing with each other. All the parts of your mind, the pushy inner critic, the playful child, the longing for lasting happiness, the calm voice that talks you off the ledge, are neighbors of a sort. In the largest sense, the neighbors of your neighbors are your neighbors, which means that every living thing is your neighbor and mine. Wow. Walt Whitman got it right when he wrote, "I am large, I contain multitudes." What should we do with our neighbors? Ignore or hate them, or recognize and love them? The latter is sure more moral, as well as much wiser in terms of cool, clear self-interest. Mess with your neighbors, and they will mess with you. Treat your neighbor with respect and goodwill, in a word, love, with love, while also standing up for your own fences, needs, and rights, and you're most likely to build a lasting peace with them, with benefits for both of you. The value of loving our neighbors is true at all scales. As you may know, the longer quotation I'm drawing on comes from both the Old and New Testaments of the Bible, in which it is said, "Love your neighbor as yourself." I understand this as both moral instruction and a clear statement that we do to our neighbors what we do to ourselves. If you hate or push away parts of yourself, they go underground and get smelly. The mind is like a septic tank, not a flush toilet. If you are a bad neighbor to people you know, you burn bridges and you end up alone. In terms of your own country and world, as Gandhi said, an eye for an eye only ends up making the whole world blind. And if humans drive neighboring plant and animal species into extinction, we poison the wellsprings of our own survival. How? I've written already about making peace with, in a sense, loving the parts of your own mind. I'll leave the topic of neighborliness with the human microbiome, all the little critters inside, to others who, unlike me, know what they're talking about. I've written a fair amount about relationships with our closest neighbors, friends, family, and coworkers. So here I'll focus on the wider circle of neighbors, the other humans in a country and world, and our planet's other living things. We begin with compassion. I once asked a teacher of mine what he was focusing on in his personal practice, and he said, "I stop for suffering." It takes both benevolence and courage to keep your heart open to the pain of another being, especially those who have harmed you or others. If you can't do a single thing, your compassion is still real and it still matters. Next, we recognize injustice. We try to be strong enough to tolerate the alarm, moral disgust, and outrage that's natural to feel when hearing about hungry children, tsunamis and famines, and bombs falling on refugees to prop up a dictator. And big enough to recognize injustices suffered by our adversaries, whether at home or abroad. Then, we do what we can. That could be political action, such as encouraging more people to vote. For example, about 100 million Americans could have voted in the recent presidential election, but did not do so. Or it could be supporting a cause close to your heart. We can also take local actions related to global issues. For example, human activity currently produces about 100 million tons of carbon dioxide a day, 40 billion tons each year, roughly half of which stays in the air to cause global warming, while a quarter sinks into and acidifies the oceans. Among other consequences, this will cause mass extinctions of plant and animal species. It's easy and eye-opening to calculate the carbon footprint of your own household. Loving your neighbors, all of them, the great and the small, the seen and the unseen, liked and disliked, expresses inner freedom. Watching politicians on the news, sometimes I think to myself, you can't stop me from loving you or doing what I can to defeat you the next time around. Hate, in all its forms, poisons the heart, while love protects and feeds it, and strengthens us to stand up for others and stand up to others. The more bitter the times and the more divisive the conflicts, the more urgent it is to be neighborly, with clear eyes and a kind heart. Then, in a deep sense, you're at home wherever you go. You have been listening to Just One Thing, Simple Practices for Resilient Happiness by Dr. Rick Hansen. This is your volunteer program. This is your volunteer programmer, Babs Felix, in Green Valley, thanking you so much for listening today. And I hope that you have a wonderful rest of your day. And now stay tuned for more programming coming to you from Sun Sounds of Arizona.